Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today co-host Chris Young is going to be helping me out. How are you doing today?
Doing good, Doug. How are you doing?
Awesome. And for people that don't know, if they're just checking in and they haven't heard other shows with you, Chris, you're producer, Chris. So you've been helping out for a while. You were kind enough to join me on some shows. So this is one of those. And this is actually just a full length, regular old show. We had a lot of fun doing sort of the bonus episode, but we took too long and we had too many topics. So I was like, you know what? Let's just do a normal episode. Today, we're going to talk about irrational money fears, of which I think we could do like a full series. So we're just going to hit a couple high points from it. We're going to, I guess, explore the idea of why people talk about work so much and the fact that you and I don't work or have traditional jobs. We have to sort of figure another way around that sort of conversation piece. And then if we have time, I think we'll be able to hit it, a day in the life of a retired or / semi-retired person. And we're just going to talk about ourselves and what we've been up to and kind of what a normal week might look like. And I think some of this stuff does come into play otherwise. So with that said, let's talk a little bit about the irrational money fears. And we each have a couple points that we'll bring up. And I'll kick it over to you, Chris. So what are some of the irrational money fears that you've heard about, experienced, or just things you're thinking about?
There's so many money fears out there, and some I've heard about are running out of money. And whether this is a real fear or not, I think most of us go through it. There's an unexpected catastrophe or a black swan event, you know, perhaps COVID, which actually did come true. So maybe it's not so irrational. But there's also maybe making the wrong decision, losing our status or identity when we leave a job. So those are just some of the ones that I've heard about. But there's actually, you know, one in particular that, and it's really what we all have, it's this fear of running out of money. And I think no matter who you are, what your background is, and perhaps maybe ironically, no matter how much money you actually have, I think all of us experience this feeling at one time or another. And I think the most interesting part to me is that this fear of losing money, it never travels alone. It's always mixed with some other type of emotion or mindset. So for example, my parents, so a quick background, they're in their mid-70s right now. They're doing well financially. They're both retired. My dad has a pension. My mom has a 401k. And they're at the point now where they're starting to take RMDs. They're trying to figure out what to do with this excess money coming in that they didn't have before and, you know, kind of toss the tax consequences out the window. Another conversation. But my mom reached out and asked, okay, we have this money coming in. What should we do with it? And she wasn't really sure. So we gathered all her numbers, took a quick look with the 4% rule, and based on what they spend, they're going to be more than fine. You know, they're already in their 70s, probably little chance of them running out of money. But it was just always this fear that they had of, well, are we allowed to spend or not? What should we do with it? And you know, I told them, do what you want, you know, travel more, live a big life, travel, buy a car. I even brought up the idea, I think, from Die with Zero, maybe passing on inheritances early, just so they can see, you know, my brother and my family, us enjoying that money early. And so we started running these numbers, and my mom got excited about it. And we brought it up to my dad. We had a spreadsheet to back it up, of course. But I think right away, my dad kind of killed the idea. He just had this thought in his mind that, no, we can't spend. We're going to run out of money. And one of the big things he latched onto was long-term care. This catastrophic event, it's going to wipe them out. And so, of course, I went in there, looked at the worst case scenario, both my mom and my dad needing long-term care at the same time, and looked at, we're here in Washington State, so looking at the best care for the average length of time. And it still didn't really impact their portfolio. I mean, yes, it took a big hit, but they would have still survived after that. But I think I found out later from my mom that my dad actually grew up poor. And so he just carried this mindset with him for 50, 60 years that there's never enough money. And so he kind of just carried this over into nowadays. And specifically to the situation, my grandma, his mom, needed long-term care. Since she didn't have any money, she had to go with Medicaid. And for those who don't know, in order to qualify for Medicaid, you have to spend down your assets. And so she was left when she passed away with very little assets, had to rely on Medicaid to cover long-term care. And I think that just stuck with my dad as well. So it's just with that experience with my grandma and his experience growing up poor, it's just no matter what you do, he had this fear of just running out of money.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Can I ask a couple, actually several pointed questions, and I'll double check. Do your parents listen to the show?
Probably not, but they probably will now because you asked that.
So, okay. Well, then if they do, with respect, because I'll just ask questions. Because the thing that like we run across and we talked, I mean, we titled this section like irrational money fear. So it's like literally it doesn't follow logic. These are psychological, I guess, interpretations or psychological impacts versus us applying logic. Because like if you're outside of it, then I could ask questions and I'm like, hey, your dad has a pension, right? That's probably pretty decent. So like there's always mm-hmm. a pension that's going to be there, which most people like don't have. My dad also has a pension. And, you know, back in those days, like they did pretty good pensions. So like he's in like pretty good shape. And the fact is like, so they're taking RMDs, which it sounds like maybe they weren't pulling money out from the retirement accounts before. Is that right?
Yeah, they had enough just relying on the pension. So this RMDs now are just extra cash stacking up in a savings account.
Right. So that was sort of implied in the question. And I'm like, this is just extra money. And they're like, I don't know. So they're basically just like saving this in a brokerage account or like somewhere else in a money market account where it's like still just sitting there. And in my head, I'm like, oh man, that is like the icing on top. Like you could spend that without even considering it because you are obviously living fine before. That said, you know, the long-term care puzzle piece, that's one that Elizabeth is very worried about and has had experience with her family where people, there's like dementia and that sort of thing. They do need long-term care sometimes for a while. And exactly what you mentioned where like the estate is basically spent down until it's low enough where the government pays for it is the bottom line. And mm-hmm. that's the thing in Die with Zero. It's like either you're going to pay for it or you're going to die or the government's going to pay for it. Like those are the three things that can happen. So yeah, it's quite interesting because it's like they've sacrificed for many years. And now it's like, you don't have a long timeline. You can spend the money. You can give it away, do whatever you want with it, but they're still a little nervous about it. So I guess this is still an ongoing thing. Like where do you see it going?
Yeah, this is actually pretty fresh. And this was really just 2 months ago or so, we started going through this process. I think it's ongoing. I think it's a little bit at a time. We're taking a vacation this year and just I'm trying to encourage them to, hey, fly first class. And my mom actually just bought tickets and they're not going first class, but they're going premium economy. So they're taking small steps, you know.
Right. Well, actually, this kind of comes into play and we won't say when we're recording this exactly. Maybe we will later. It doesn't really matter. But like, you know, the market's up and down. And if you're listening to this in a few years, there still will be like volatility and stuff. And, you know, one of the things is even though, you know, you did the spreadsheet for your parents and like they're older, they have a shorter time horizon, they have more money, more asset, like they're still a little nervous. But you know, Elizabeth just retired. I've stepped down the work that I'm doing. So my revenue and income is like much lower to almost non-existent. I'm not even sure like where it's going to lie exactly. But the fact is like with the market down currently over the last couple days and weeks, we're pausing for a second, even though we have an extremely robust budget and portfolio and our projections hold up and if you were not explicitly using the 4% rule, but if you were to reverse engineer like what we spent last year, I suspect it would probably be like in the 2 to 2.5% range, like pretty far under the threshold where, you know, it's 100% successful based on historical data, blah, blah, blah. But we're pausing as well, which is a little bit irrational, but I think it's normal because it's really hard for us to deal with uncertainty just in general. Do you have any thoughts on that? You're about a year ahead of Elizabeth, right? You retired 2 years ago.
Correct. Yeah.
So how are you feeling? What do you think about stuff like that?
I think it's still hard for me to spend money, and maybe as far as the investing part, not that I'm anybody special, but I think I've gone through enough investing cycles now where I know it's, you know, can't tell for sure, but history kind of shows that we're going to bounce back from this. You know, we bounced back from COVID, from world wars, Great Depression, Great Recession, all these things. So I have that in mind, kind of long-term view. But on the flip side, and this is probably going to sound weird, but even spending on smaller things is really strange for me. About a month or so ago, we had our furnace. It was on about to die. And so we had to get a replacement, and we had someone come in, give us an estimate for the furnace and the heat pump and the water heater. And it ended up being like 24,000. And so overall, you know, that's supposed to last 10 years, 15 years. So it's a big hit, but it's not going to kill us. But I had so many kind of sleepless nights, just, I don't want to shell out $24,000, even though I know that recently my portfolio went down probably more than that in a day. I mean, easily.
It is so funny. Yeah. Yeah. I was talking with Mark Troutman from Mark's Money Mind, a mutual friend. And basically he and I like headed out and traveled a little bit together while we were going to Cincinnati. We were on the same flight, so we were hanging out quite a bit. He hooked me up with like getting into the Capital One lounge, a number of things. So thank you, Mark, for that. But during some of his travels in the last year, we highlighted this on a previous episode. Basically, they're traveling, they're doing this stuff, they're taking like fairly expensive trips where it's like, wow, that's actually a pretty significant amount of money. And then they get back from their trip and they check their portfolio and it's like, it's up by like way more than whatever it was that the whole trip cost. And it's pretty amazing. That said, I mean, those gains are erased already, but the point is volatility is expected. And I think like the way, you know, the FIRE community is aware of the volatility, if you've been around for a few cycles. So I think maybe some of the younger folks, they haven't gone through, but like you and I, like dot-com bubble, Great Recession, like a couple other things. Like I've fucked up before where I've like either pulled money out or stopped investing. So now I know it's like, hey, this is a long-term like compound interest situation. Like we're thinking in decades, not like months, or like if there's a lot of volatility, I don't really care. In fact, I won't pull out the guitar and play, but like I recently sold my truck, which Chris, we'll talk, maybe you could interview me talking about selling the truck, but I got way more for the truck than I expected I was going to. And I bought a new guitar yesterday. Like,
man, you blew that money already?
Just like the little bit on top, the extra. So this is a 1933 Kalamazoo KG11. It's pretty cool. It looks all beat up. I got a killer deal on it. Very excited about it. Like I said, I'm not going to bore people by playing, but I didn't let the market downturn impact me. I was like, got a little bit more money for this. I got rid of the truck. My expenses are lower because I got rid of the truck. And now I have a sweet new guitar that I get to play with. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I think that goes to show too, just keep that long-term view. If you have a plan, follow the plan. If you have an investor policy statement, follow that and just live your life. Let the markets do what they're going to do, and you just kind of live your life like usual.
And the one caveat, the one rational thing we can add to this is I do realize there are some people where it would impact things. And if you didn't plan exactly right, because we've had such really favorable markets for the last several years, maybe you didn't rebalance. That's the word I'm looking for. Maybe you didn't rebalance your portfolio anticipating retirement. So basically, like if you're approaching retirement or you're about to retire and you didn't have, if you didn't account for volatility when you're retiring, you may be in a spot where you're like, oh shit, I actually have 100% equities and very little cash on hand. And you could be impacted by the sequence of return risk when the market's down. And at that point, it's like, well, you may have to work for a couple more years to either build up cash or rebalance into some bonds or however you want to, I guess, set up a buffer to make sure you could weather these sort of downturns. Do you have any comments on that? Did you do that when you retired?
No.
Okay.
I should have.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like a lot of people are like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to be 100% equities because on paper, like that should be better, but like psychologically that's harder to do. And I mean, the sequence of returns, I mean, that's a thing. So if you take a big hit at the beginning for a couple of years, like that could cause some issues for you.
Yeah. The way I think about it is just maintaining flexibility. And I kind of have these backup plans in place. Like you mentioned, if I really needed to, I could go back and get a job, even if it's part-time. I don't mind hanging out at Target or Costco, you know, if we really needed that money. I think about we can cut back on our discretionary spending. We're spending a lot right now on some travel and different activities like going to concerts. So we could always dial back on those if things get bad. And really worst case scenario, if we had to, we could sell our house. We have enough equity in it right now where we can maybe either geo arbitrage to a different location in the United States or even just within the same town. So that's kind of how I've maintained that too. It's just, I know I've probably done the wrong thing by not having a balanced portfolio, but my strategy is just to maintain flexibility and kind of just be aware of what's going on and combat it in different ways if I have to. And that's probably the price I pay, you know, by doing this.
Right. Yeah. There's so many different ways to slice it. I mean, some people, they feel more comfortable with like a pretty huge cash buffer, or maybe they don't have a mortgage and they own their house outright, even though they had a fairly low interest rate mortgage on paper, you know, may not work out as well, but it does give them peace of mind and psychologically a little bit of an advantage. And I think it's important, you know, not to always just like look at the numbers because there's a lot more at play, like going back to the story of your parents, you know? So, all right. There are so many other things that we could talk about related to irrational money fears. So I'll invite people to leave a comment on YouTube if you're watching over there, or send me an email, doug@milehighfi.com, and maybe it'll inspire us to do another show deeper into a specific irrational money fear. So we'll move on to the next section here, so that we don't go on forever. Our sound check is about 15 minutes long, and we talk about music. So it's longer than a normal sound check, but it was totally worth it. Now, I want to let you know, this episode was brought to you by GhostBed. So thanks a lot to GhostBed. And we have the Lux mattress. It's one of the sort of softer, fluffier mattresses. Really enjoy it. Like I think all of the GhostBed products, it has the cooling technology. There's many layers in a bed, and the cooling technology is very helpful for a hot sleeper like me. I enjoy the Lux bed very much. Now, I can't remember, Chris. Now, you haven't been over to the house, but I think you will be visiting before too long. Have you ever laid in a ghost bed before? Do you have a ghost bed?
I actually don't, but my parents do.
Very cool. Awesome. So do they like it pretty well? You could just make up any story you want about how much your parents like the bed.
Yeah, they love it. They love it. No, on a serious note, they really do like it. They have, I think, the split king, and my parents are different types of sleepers. My mom has to be elevated while sleeping. My dad doesn't like that. So it's kind of nice to have that different, the different options there. But I actually helped them put it together. So I kind of have all the know-how behind it, you know, behind the scenes.
Cool. That's awesome. I'm glad they got one. So in the Split King, super cool. We don't have one. We have talked about upgrading. We're currently on a queen size mattress, which some people have teased us that, hey, aren't you grownups? Like, get a king size bed. Like, what's, but we have, you know, things that work. The size works. Everything's cool. And then when we go to a hotel and there's a king bed, it's like, oh, this is a big treat, you know. But the Split King, super cool because you know, you could raise up the top, sleep elevated if you want, but you could also like put a little bend in your knees, which takes some pressure off your back if people have, you know, back issues or something like that. Very versatile, very nice equipment. So thanks to GhostBed. Check the show notes for the specific promo. You can go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi or follow the notes and it'll tell you exactly what to do. I think there's a different sort of promo, so I don't want to say anything that's incorrect. So I'll just leave it wide open and let you know. It'll be a great deal if you head over there to GhostBed. So thanks a lot to GhostBed. Another thing that we want to talk about is a meetup that's happening in your neck of the woods. So Chris, what's going on up there?
Yeah, so we got a meetup coming up in the Seattle area. It's going to be on Saturday, May 31st. And what we're trying to do is kind of, there's a local group in Seattle and there's other local groups in the region. And we're just trying to get everyone together all in one spot. So it'll be the Choose FI Puget Sound Meetup. It's going to be like a knockoff version of a Camp Fi or an Economy. I know a lot of people can't make it out to those events because you have to travel outside of Seattle to get there. So the idea is to bring that flavor back to Seattle, let everyone experience that. So we're going to have a couple hours of presenters, volunteers giving 10 to 15 minute speeches. And after that, we'll have some breakout sessions in the afternoon, kind of getting smaller groups. So kind of that, you know, economy feel. And so for more information, we'd love to have you join us Saturday, May 31st. There's the Choose FI Seattle group on Facebook. Go ahead and check that out there. And I can put a link in the show notes too. There's a Google Doc with a couple page info sheet there as well.
Right on. Very cool. And I know Brad and Jonathan have like the website. So they're trying to get stuff off of Facebook. Is there activity there too? Or is like the Facebook place the place to go?
Probably for now, Facebook's the place. But we are also on that Chooseify app and website as well. So there's information there for those who are on there.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, pretty cool. I signed up over there, but like most of the stuff, I sign up for it and then I could totally forget. It looked awesome for what I was doing, but I'm not actively trying to like get engaged in stuff. I am just locking myself next to the guitars and trying to play there. So, all right, very cool. We'll link up. So Puget Sound Meetup for Choose FI. Sounds pretty awesome. Is it free? Is that?
Yeah, totally free. We're making this a crowdsourced event, so we'd love to have you join us and also volunteer to help out, give a presentation, lead a breakout group, and mostly just come hang out. Come meet others in your community and talk personal finance and financial independence. Yeah.
Awesome. Very good. Last little announcement before we get back on task here is I set up a Mile High Fi Etsy store. So basically, you can get a couple t-shirts. There's a hoodie. Many people have asked me about the tech shirt. So that's like the wicking shirts, the polyester blend or whatever. So you could work out, go to the gym, or if you're a sweater like me, you could wear that and it'll dry out quick. So I'll link up to that. I haven't set up other products in there. It's print on demand. Basically, I think you got to pay for shipping. It takes a little while. So this is not like Amazon where you can get it like that afternoon or anything like that. So you can have a look if you want to support the show. You can get stuff there. I'll add other products. If you have a product idea, let me know. I haven't, you know what? Maybe by the time this goes up, I'll have some sort of asparagus shirt, you know, that'll really catch the eye. People will ask you, why the fuck do you have a asparagus stock on your shirt? And then you'll have a lot to talk about. So we'll link up and you can check that out. Okay. Moving on to the next topic. Why do people talk about work so much? And I can think of so many occasions where it's just like, oh, what do you do for work? And what do I say? I mean, at least nowadays I could say podcast and YouTube and people know what that is. But like for a little while, they're like, oh, they don't even know what to say to that. But yeah, this is an interesting one. And Chris, I think, again, you could kick it off. You have a great way to put context around this.
In American culture, by default, especially, whenever you meet someone new, they always lead off with, what do you do for a living? What's your job? When you talk to friends or family you haven't seen for a while, they always ask, how's work going? And to all that, I say, who cares? You know, why do we always talk about this? It's just so lazy. I kind of became more attuned to it probably in the past couple of years of just always talking about work, 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 when there's so much other things in the world to talk about. And so I guess you've noticed that too, right, Doug? It sounds like.
Totally. Yeah. I was recently at a kind of an entrepreneurship meetup, and people kind of, it's like, well, what do you do? But someone mentioned a trip, and then they were like, hey, Doug, have you been to wherever? And I was like, I haven't been there. But then I just talked about travel, which luckily I had a story queued up because we just got back from Death Valley and Joshua Tree. And I could say, oh, we're trying to go to all the national parks now. We've been to all 50 states. And it's just like interesting stuff that you like to do versus work. Because I, you know, I could talk about podcasting and stuff, but really, most people don't have much to say about that unless they're in the podcasting world. They're just like, oh, you're like a content creator. Like, they don't even know what to do with it unless they happen to have their own podcast or something like that. So when you go around the neighborhood, or like there's some, you know, some sort of gathering or party in the neighborhood, is that what people ask you? And you're here retired now. So what do you say when people are like, oh yeah, what do you do, Chris?
Yeah, I think I have the same problem. I think for a while it was always just a pause, and I would just say my old job, engineer, because that came by default. And I didn't want it to get too weird. I don't like to talk to people. So I didn't want to get into a whole conversation of, you know, oh, I'm retired early and blah, blah, blah. But I've actually recently just used, you know, podcast editor, producer. And most of the time it receives a positive response, like, oh, that's cool. Never met someone in person who's done that, and turns into, you know, into a good thing. Nice. But I think a lot of other time too, I'll just kind of change the conversation. We'll talk about like travel or anything else, and just a way to deflect. And because I think once you talk about work, it just steamrolls. And I've had people where they just go on and on and on about complaining about their boss or the long hours they're working. And it's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, and really, I don't care either, not to be mean, but.
Yeah. And no listeners do this, but pro tip for other people, or maybe we could just laugh at those other people. No one wants to hear you complain, like basically ever. No one wants to hear you complain. No one cares about your work either. Like if you're complaining about your boss, like that's the worst thing. It's so. I mean, we don't even care about work now. So it's just like, yeah, I don't give a fuck if you're, quit your job if you don't like it. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, man. Well, and on a positive note, what do you ask people? So you gave us a little hint, but it is sort of a default. And occasionally I met neighbors recently, and I was a little bit curious about the work that they did. So I was like, I am genuinely curious about the work, and I would quickly migrate from that to a different, more interesting topic. But if you are in that neighborhood party, you meet someone new, what do you ask them instead of about work?
I think pretty much anything else under the sun. I'll try to make it, you know, hey, what hobbies do you have? You know, do you volunteer? Hey, what kind of plans do you have coming up? Are you traveling? Do you like spending time with your family? What do you guys do? So just kind of anything besides work. And I think it helps out, you know, walking around the neighborhood, you can kind of pick out something maybe you have in common. Or one of the examples too is I volunteer to coach my kids' sports teams. And so there, it's always, we can talk about the kids and talk about other things like that. And work just never seems to come up. I think if you don't lead off with the topic, by default, it won't come up. But if you do let that kind of work creep in there, then it just, it's a snowball. It never ends and you can never escape without, you know, running away.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. Different settings. So you get the neighborhood party. Maybe there's like holiday parties occasionally. Maybe it's like your kids, other kids' parents or whatever. So you bump into like different folks in different settings. I find, not that I do this often, because I don't think I'm in the general situation where I'm trying to avoid like the work talk stuff, but asking about trips, that's always good, because usually either someone has a trip coming up or they've been on a trip recently and you can go on that. That's usually far more interesting. However, I'm just thinking about the complaining thing, and I have to make sure I don't complain while I complain about people complaining. When people are telling a story, do you find this, Chris? When people are telling a story, they're just telling you like the negative parts of it, and like either the negative parts of it where they're kind of complaining, or they're like complaining about how other people are stupid or something like that. Those are the worst stories. It's like a negative point of view from the get-go. And it's just like, it just brings everything down. But for some reason, people think those stories are good. Do you observe this as well?
Yeah, for sure. It's always like a downward spiral. It just never ends. You just one complaint, second complaint, and it's like, hey, all of a sudden 2 hours passed and I haven't heard anything fun or exciting, just negativity.
And then you have the person that tries to one-up them and they're like, oh, you think that's bad? Let me tell you this worst thing. And it's like, how about positive stories? Like, let's do that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's, I mean, sometimes they are funny. And maybe that's it. Because I do enjoy stand-up comedy. And a lot of times, great bits and great stories have like a negative origin. And then it spins off. And people that are really good at this can make it funny. But if you're not careful, it just sounds like complaining. Again, I have to make sure the segment is like me complaining about people complaining. Which, I mean, I get it. How do I stop spiraling out of control here, Chris? Where are we at?
It's too late, man. It's too late. We're done.
Okay. Well, I am a pro podcaster, so I can say like we can sort of avoid the work questions. We could ask about hobbies, volunteer, trips, and travel. Those are a good place to navigate. And if people do ask you about your work, you can maybe give like a quick answer and then like transition quickly into one of those more interesting, more positive things. Any other tips from you?
No, I think that's it. Start on a positive note, you know, keep it out of the conversation and move on from there. And I think overall, it's just, like I said before, just kind of a lazy habit. We just talk about work and, you know, unless you're in that field, it's not really relevant. So it's the best for everyone to just keep talking about something different.
Yeah. All right. As we wrap it up here, we have one more left. And this is sort of the day in the life of a retired, like an early retiree, we'll put it that way. And I was doing an interview with an entrepreneur, a YouTuber. She does really well. And she's a little bit younger than me. I think she's like 10 years younger than me. So she's like 35. And after the call, I was chatting with her. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty much semi-retired. Like I'm doing these interviews because I enjoy them. My wife just retired. And she was sort of like dumbfounded. She thought, and actually said, she was like, I have to be doing something. Like I'm so productive. Like I think I would be so bored. And I think a younger version of myself with much longer and thicker hair would have said, yeah, like I need to be productive and I want to get stuff done and I want to, you know, be a middle manager at some company and like climb the corporate ladder and get bonuses and like do all the bullshit. And now she's an entrepreneur. She wasn't going down that path. But as I am on the other side here, I'm not bored, number one. I'm not bored at all. I have several hobbies, and I feel like I don't have quite enough time to get everything done that I want to do. And I pick what I want to do, and I feel like I don't understand anymore how people with jobs get anything done. Because I could tell, like yesterday, actually, it's Wednesday when we're recording this. So Monday and Tuesday, I spent probably like 30 minutes doing work combined in the 2 days. The other part of the time, I was like looking up deals to get the guitar that I was talking about. And then I got the guitar, and then I like cleaned it up and did stuff like that. So I spent like hours doing this like extra thing that was just for fun, that was a hobby. And I don't get it. I don't get how people get anything done, which I know we're in a weird bubble, right, man? Like there's a handful of us that are semi-retired at a much younger age than like other folks, like probably at least 15 years earlier than like what I would have thought before. Like how old are you when you retired, Chris?
42.
Great. Yeah. So young, in the prime of your life, and you're retired, and it's supposed to be the decade of like our highest earning years, right? Is that like 40 to 55 or 50 to 6? I don't know, whatever. Is that something like that?
Sounds right. Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, so what does a day look like? I described a couple things, but and we'll say like a day slash week, because sometimes things are a little bit different, but like sort of a typical week for you and your family, like what do you get up to? And tell us about your days.
Okay. So just to let everyone know, I'm probably the most boring early retired person ever. So if you want to stop the podcast right now, go ahead and leave. But if you want to, anyone who wants to listen, it took me a while to kind of figure out my rhythm. I had all these big ideas of I'm going to volunteer, I'm going to learn another language, I'm going to maybe get another degree or become a CFP, all these big ideas. And I do have friends who are early retired and they do those things. They volunteer. I have a friend who joined her choir at church, which is start a business. And this is all awesome. I think for me, after working for 20 years, it was just decompression time for a while, exploring what I wanted to do with my life at that point. And we had gone on some trips. And so it wasn't a typical year. And so maybe like 9 months, 12 months into it, I started settling into a routine. And it was kind of based around my kids, about their life, because they're a constraint, I guess, you know, in the best possible way. If they're listening, you guys are a good constraint. But we do have to work around their school schedule as far as the daily schedule and the school year. So a typical day is I'll get up before my daughter gets up. I'll make sure she's up and ready to go. I'll take both my kids to the bus. Once they're out of the house, I'll do some things like work on the podcast. I'll talk to my wife, and that's the best part of my day. It's like I can go out into the next room, get some coffee. We'll just strike up a conversation, talk about nothing. And all of a sudden, it's 2 hours later. Like, where did this time go? I'll exercise. I have an exercise bike in the garage. I'll do that when the weather's bad. I'll go out on the trail in town for a couple hours when the weather's nicer. Kids come home, take them to their activities, and then, you know, kind of just hang out, have dinner, end of the night, spend it all together. And then the weekends too, just a lot of kids' activities, or we'll go do concerts or sporting events, things like that. But at this stage of life right now, it's mostly, it's a lot of family time. And I know that's probably just, you know, it's pretty boring to most people, but this is just my kind of season of life. And I think I mentioned this, not sure if I told you before, Doug, but it kind of feels like making up for lost time. So when I had worked, I would get up early in the morning. I'd have to commute to work about an hour, hour and a half. So I'd leave before the kids were even awake, be gone all day. I would come home just in time for dinner. After that, we'd have maybe an hour or two. And then my kids would actually tuck me in because I had to get up early the next day. And it was just like, I missed out on all this life with them. So it feels like now it's nothing too exciting, but I like it. I'm happy with it. And it's not the most exciting, but this is what makes me happy for right now.
That's perfect. I mean, that's what life is, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. Like we went to, I took my son, I was a chaperone for his field trip yesterday. We went to the state capitol. That was awesome. I'm coaching his football team right now. 10-year-old kids. We started the season 3-0. That's what's important to me at the moment. So it's
that's awesome. That's pretty fun. Yeah, man. That sounds perfect. Like kind of there's some constraints, like you said, with like certain time frames, but then there's like open time. And it's like, I imagine similar to me, some days you're like, I feel a lot of energy for whatever reason. You slept good last night and you're like, I'm gonna hike more, or I'm gonna work out more this day. And then some days you feel a little tired and you're like, you know what, I'm not gonna do that, I'm gonna do something else instead. And you have that flexibility and autonomy. And from, you know, a higher level situation, like I feel so much happier, number one, like when I started working for myself, because then people couldn't tell me what to do. And then now just being able to like do what you want, whenever you want to do it, for as long as you want to do it, that's pretty awesome. So cool.
And then on your side, Doug, do you have any type of structure? Sounds like you're able to bounce around, kind of work when you want, but do you have any set, get up at a certain time every day, or eat a meal at a certain time, go to the gym at a certain time? Is there any structure to your life, or is it all kind of willy-nilly, you know?
Yeah, it's very flexible. I typically wake up whenever I'm ready. Nowadays, it's actually been creeping a little bit later because I've been wearing an eye mask. And in the past, like as the days are getting longer, heading into spring and summer, I would like keep creeping earlier as I woke up, as it got brighter, I'd wake up at like 4:30 or 5, and that's a non-starter for me. So I wake up probably between like 6 and 7 or so, or 5:30 and 7. And typically I'll walk Georgie for 2 to 3 miles or so. I often walk into some of the shops and hardware stores, where places where they allow dogs, which is almost everywhere if you just act like you're supposed to be there and walk in. So there's like some light socialization. I see people. It's not like I just walk and don't see anyone. So I'll chat with some folks and that sort of thing pretty often. I'll do the sort of, in air quotes, productive stuff in the morning. So my mind is a little sharper in the morning. So somewhere between say like 9 and noon is typically when I like to sit down and, you know, write an email or clear my inbox or maybe do an interview or record something. Not a hard and fast rule. Sometimes I need to do an interview in the afternoon for the podcast, but the morning is kind of what I prefer. I like going to the gym, which I can walk to, usually between say like 11:30 and 3 or so, because it's less crowded. So I don't stay the whole time. Usually I'll work out for like an hour and a half or 2 or so. But as long as it's in that window where most people are at work or doing something else, I can go in and do what I want to do. And I actually enjoy working out, being in the gym. Like since I was a kid, middle school time frame, like I would spend, you know, several days, a few hours at the gym. So I'm not like working out super hard. It's just like, I dig it there and it's so close, I could walk to it. So that's like a pretty core part of most days, probably like 4 to 7 days a week. So it just depends on like what else is going on. I also enjoy going to the grocery store. So I like to cook a lot, and I actually like to go to the store and like pick out the stuff. And I know some people like to order online and have it delivered and all that stuff. I like to go and, you know, thump the melons and touch the briskets and, you know, see what I'm getting. And I like doing that stuff. It's not too far. There's a Costco that I could like ride the bike to, and like the Sam's that I go to is just, you know, it's like 2-3 miles away. So everything's pretty close. The other thing is like by afternoon timeframe, by around 3, probably not, I'm not doing any more work. I'm not doing anything like that. That's been that way for years. So, and like I said, the last couple of days, like the amount of work that I actually did has only been like 30 minutes. I wrote an email like once, and the rest of the time I'm like doing some other stuff. I have mentioned guitars a lot, and I appreciate it when people ask me when they see me at events or whatever, geek out on this stuff. And it's been fun, like researching and like finding gear, and like the guitar that I mentioned earlier, super cool one. I won't bore everyone with all these details, but yeah, it's from 1933. It was built during the Depression. And the interesting thing is like, I found it on Craigslist, and the listing was horrible. There was like one picture. No offense to the dude. Dude was totally cool, but like the listing wasn't very good, and he didn't really know anything about the guitar at all. So when asked a couple questions, he was like, I don't really know. I don't even know what you're talking about. So like, you can come take a look at it, blah, blah, blah. The cool part is like, he got the guitar via a trade. So he actually has like a small recording studio. So he got the guitar from a trade. So that means he doesn't have any like cost basis to be a financial nerd about it. He doesn't have money in it, and he doesn't have like a real anchor point. So I knew like he didn't value it as much just because like he got a good deal when he traded it. And, you know, I spent like 3 hours yesterday cleaning it up. Like it was in pretty rough shape overall, but like I cleaned it up and I'm like, damn, this thing's like in really nice condition. All that to say, like I have some guitar hobbies and I enjoy like playing them, and I'm trying to learn a little bit more. And in fact, Elizabeth plays the banjo a little bit. So we're working on a tune where we're playing together. So I play the flat pick guitar and she plays the banjo. So imagine dueling banjos, like something like that, right? So yeah, we're able to like practice on our own, and then we're coming together and like trying to play together, which is pretty fun. And it exercises our mind. Like that's one of those things, like if you're actually practicing music, you can't do other stuff. Like it's kind of like reading a book. Like you can't watch TV or a movie and like read a book at the same time. Like you can go back and forth, but like you're not getting either one quite right. And like playing music with my buddy Tyler, he plays the drums. We'll be in there for 3 hours. It feels like 2 minutes went by. It just flies by. It is absolutely amazing. So anyway, I spend time trying to play music and I really enjoy it, which people will understand when you get to the sound check portion where we talk for quite a while about music. Now, you said you played some guitar, right? Can we talk quickly about that? Tell us about your musical history, right?
Long time ago. Long, long time ago.
Okay.
I haven't played in years.
Okay. I was planning on us rehearsing, playing some music while you're when you're in the area here.
I can pick up the spoons.
All right.
I could do perfect. A spoon solo. There you go.
Awesome. Yeah. So I trailed off. So music, I like to be active. So I am usually working out for, you know, a couple hours, a few times a week. What other stuff? You know me, Chris. Like what other stuff do I end up doing during the day? Can you remember?
Well, I actually have an important question that we forgot. So it sounds like you play guitar. Elizabeth plays banjo. We have your friend Tyler with the drums. Now, what does Georgie play?
She occasionally has walked by the guitar. Her tail hits the strings and it's tuned to an open chord. So I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty good, actually, if she could just walk by. Yeah, but that's about it. She's untrained. She's just natural talent. You know.
There you go.
Going back to the, you know, the day in the life stuff. I think, like I said, there's plenty to do, and it is so interesting. Like there's a lot of stuff that I want to do. And one thing I'll mention here, a lot of times people will say, hey, I know you're probably really busy. And for several years, I'll just tell them, I'm like, actually, no, I am not busy, but it is through me fairly stringently saying no to stuff. So we were talking before we started recording. We have a few things going on like today, and it's too many things. Mr. Money Mustache, I think I've heard him mention a couple times. He likes to have like one thing per day. You know, you don't want to have too many things because then it feels busy. Something goes wrong, right? Timing goes off, the traffic, something. So it's like, usually it's not a best case scenario. So when you start stacking things up, you get busy. And I totally remember this from like when I did have a job and I did have to drive through traffic, and you probably, you know, with Seattle traffic, right, man, like basically it takes forever to get anywhere, right? So yep. if you're like relying on being able to get somewhere quickly or not accounting the uncertainty of traffic, like you end up in a situation where you're like late or you're stressed out because you're going to be late. And I hate that stuff. So at this point, as much as I can, I do try to limit the number of things that I'm working on so that I do have like open time during the day where I could sort of goof off most of the time. Sometimes you can't get around it, and I totally understand that, but it makes for me, it's much easier to deal with those days that you can't control it, because sometimes shit happens and you have to, you know, help out a friend to do something, and there's always something unexpected. So if you have like that open space, and we have the luxury to have open space, it makes me like way less stressed out, like all the time. So do you have any comments on that?
No, I hear you. And I think that's something I need to work on myself. I always feel like even though I have flexibility, I have my own schedule, it always feels like I'm behind. I got something else to do, and I want to pull it forward. But a lot of things I want to do are way in the future. But it's just because there's no one there, there's no boss saying you have this specific deadline. In my mind, I always just want to bring it forward because I can do it. So I think that's just something I need to work on myself. So probably taking advice from you, you know, just the way you're handling things. I think the one other thing to watch out for too, this probably catches me, is, you know, Parkinson's law. And you probably know that, Doug, but for those who don't know, it's this law that work expands to fill the time available for its completion. And so if you have a hard deadline, you're kind of like, you're marching towards that. Okay, I'm going to get it done at this certain time because I have to. I'll rush to get it done. Maybe it's not the best, but that's what it is. Kind of the danger, caution for people like us who have more time. It's, oh, since I have unlimited time, I can just keep on working this. I can either keep refining it till it gets better, or maybe drag my feet on it and it just never gets done. So that's kind of something that I've been dealing with as well.
Yep. Yeah. I do the same thing. So it's just like, if I'm like, oh, I got plenty of time, it'll take me whatever, 8 hours to do something really dumb. It's just silly to waste that time. So it is good to have like some anchor points or be aware that we will waste time, which is not a bad, I mean, like we have the luxury, like we spent 20 plus years not doing that and like working ahead and like planning ahead and all that stuff. And I think if this is the time of our lives where we're a little bit lazier and we don't have to fill like every minute with something productive. In fact, it's kind of good to throw in some just dumb, wasteful things in there. Fun stuff. Just throw fun stuff in there. So anyway, yeah, I mentioned the lazy thing. Side note, an episode ago, I mentioned perhaps picking up the lazy book and working on it a little bit. A lot of people reached out, which is cool. And they were like, yes, we do want to get our hands on this book. So I just haven't gotten around to it yet. I'm sure I'm going to get to it before too long. If you are interested, shoot me an email, doug@milehighfi.com. Let me know that you do want to see the book. So we're close to the threshold where I'm like, all right, I'm going to work on this thing, but it's hard to get the motivation. I'm the right person to write the book, you know?
I mean, it's right on brand, right?
Yeah. It's just so hard to get around. I got some other stuff to do probably. I don't know. I'll get around to it. But all right, man, any other thoughts before we wrap it up, Chris?
No, I think I'm good. Thanks, Doug.
Cool. All right. People, check out Ghostbed. Check out the link if you're in the vicinity of the Puget Sound area. There's a cool meetup coming up on May 31st. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. Yeah. We'll link up so people can check it out. And if you want to check out the Mile Hi-Fi store, we'll put a link for that too. Thanks, Chris. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile Hi-Fi podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. You had a great idea for the sound check today, so I'll let you introduce it here.
Okay, so this is very timely, Doug. We're in voting season right now, and not talking about politics or anything, but more importantly, we have 2025 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees. The voting's going on right now, and the nominees will be introduced, I think, end of April.
All right. Very cool. Now, the thing is, we're going to talk about a couple of the bands and artists that are nominated here, but I actually never pay attention to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees or any kind of stuff. I'll see headlines when it makes like the news or something like that, but I usually don't pay much attention. So I was like, I don't know if I'll care. And then I took a look and I was like, this is pretty cool. Now, do you pay attention to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees and such?
No, probably same as you. I'll see it in the headlines every once in a while, but I don't really care too much. It's just interesting to see, you know, who's nominated and who's not, and for whatever reason.
Right on. So why don't you talk about one of the bands first, and then we're going to go back and forth just a bit here.
So the 2025 nominees, alphabetical order, we got Bad Company, The Black Crowes, Mariah Carey, Chubby Checker, Joe Cocker, Billy Idol, Joy Division / New Order, Cyndi Lauper, Mana, Oasis, Outkast, Phish, Soundgarden, and the White Stripes. So I guess the one for me that stands out, it's really because I grew up in the Seattle area. So this one's, you know, pretty personal to me, but of course, Soundgarden. So Doug, are you familiar with the Big Four of grunge?
I believe I probably am. Can I try to guess the, So Soundgarden, Nirvana, Alice in Chains, and, Pearl Jam.
Yes. There you go. Yeah. So those are the big four.
Interesting.
So of course, Soundgarden, you know, they're one of the pioneers of grunge music. And I don't know if you know, but they're probably the oldest band of all four of these. They formed in 1984, about 3 years before Nirvana formed. And so they were just, you know, really highly connected with the Seattle music scene and helped its formation. They helped develop that Seattle sound, and they were the first grunge band to sign to a major label. And they paved the way for other bands to get signed and wider recognition on a global scale. So they're just really influential. So it's kind of ironic that out of those four bands, though, the big four, they're probably the least successful, at least commercially. Mm. But as far as their impact to me, I think they're the biggest one.
Interesting. Before we started recording, we mentioned like, hey, which bands are you talking about? So we're going to talk about this the same two. Is that the thing? That's pretty funny. I was aware of Soundgarden in high schoolish, that 94. Like I kind of remember Black Hole Sun was blowing up. Like that was the first one that I recall. And I wasn't too into like into grunge in general until many years later. In fact, one of the bands that I really like, Stone Temple Pilots, they have some grunge influence, but they're, you know, Southern California band, technically, like out of San Diego. But anyway, they had some similar sound and it was the right time period. But anyway, I'm a little behind. So funny enough, I really didn't get into Soundgarden too much until maybe like 10 or 12 years ago. I started watching more YouTube and I would see a bunch of like Chris Cornell solo stuff. And I was like, fuck, this guy is awesome. So I started listening a little bit more to his solo stuff, which are often covers of, you know, Soundgarden tunes. And then started really digging in maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, downloaded like stuff from basically the 90s. So I'm about 30 years behind. And funny enough, I mentioned Alice in Chains. I was like, you know what? I think they're pretty awesome. I didn't really like them back then. So I just downloaded and I've been listening to Alice in Chains, like again, 30-year-old albums, like for the last couple of weeks. So I'm like, oh, wow, this stuff is good. So when I'm playing music with my buddy Tyler, so he's a drummer, big Fish fan, by the way, he may have observed I was hitting like some more dissonant chords and just playing a little harder because I was like playing some more like Alice in Chains inspired riffs instead of like just straight, you know, 1-4-5 blues kind of stuff. So anyway, Soundgarden's awesome. Really, I was really sad when Chris Cornell died. Was it like 2016 or so?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep moving on here. So anything else Soundgarden wise?
Do you remember that song Spoon Man off of Super Unknown?
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, there really is a Spoon Man. His name's Artist the Spoon Man, and he's a street musician around Seattle. And during college, I went to University of Washington. So, you know, I saw him perform a lot around town. So it's pretty cool to see him in person. You know, you hear that spoon solo, just, it's pretty amazing to see, you know.
Pretty cool. And just if people want to check it out, they probably heard that song, but one that I found, maybe a deeper cut, Limo Wreck, also from Super Unknown, right? Remember that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a nice hard one. If people want to check that out, get tips about 30-year-old music. Okay. For me, when I saw the list, I was a little surprised. It's interesting. So some of these people are like really old bands, like Joe Cocker. He played at Woodstock, right? Chubby Checker. There's some people in here. You're like, man, how did they not make the cut before? Very interesting. But I saw the Black Crowes on here and I've really loved the Black Crowes. They're an Atlanta band. I saw them several times back in the Southeast and yeah, great music. I think probably my favorite album from them is Southern Harmony and Musical Companion, their second one. And then Amorica, perhaps a close second, or they're tied. They're great. They're great overall. And in the last couple of years, I mean, the band has like imploded in so many ways. So I won't go into the huge drama, but it's great rock and roll drama. So if people want to get the book by Steve Gorman, the drummer, who's no longer in the band, you could hear all the drama and stuff. But Black Crowes, really fun band, and actually inspired one of my early tattoos. So this is actually... showing tattoos for the people that are just listening. I got this tattoo in, I think, like 2006. It's a Celtic design. And while technically not crows or ravens, they kind of look like crows up here. So it sort of blends into the rest of the sleeve, which I've added in the last couple of years here. There's been a lot of hours of me listening to the Black Crowes. So yeah, what's your connection with them?
One of my friends in high school back in the 90s, so about 30 years ago, he was really into the old bands from the 60s and 70s, the big ones like Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith, and the Beatles, of course, and some of the lesser well-known bands, Yardbirds, Blind Faith, Fleetwood Mac, the original with Peter Green. But he was into all these bands, and one of the newer bands he was into was Black Crowes. And he told me I should listen to them. I'm like, I'm already into Zeppelin and Pink Floyd, so I'm cool. And then about 5 years later, I was at probably a CD store, if people remember those. There was a bargain bin there, right? It doesn't exist anymore, barely any. But there was a bargain bin there, probably 99-cent CD, Black Crowes. And it ended up being Southern Harmony, their second album, like you had mentioned. So I remember my friend talking about them. I picked it up, put it in my Discman, and just, you know, right away just hit me like, whoa, what have I been missing here? And it just reminded me of all that classic rock sound, and they're carrying on that tradition. You know, they're a 90s band, but they're carrying on the feel and the musical stylings of the 60s and 70s. So just, yeah, I've been a big fan ever since, and follow them and kind of followed all the different breakups and reformations they've had. So.
Yeah. One of the shows, and I think we could just do a whole show about music of yesteryear, but we'll have to wrap it up. I'll say one more thing. So I had tickets in 99 because Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin did play with the Black Crowes. They were doing a tour, and I had fucking tickets in, I think, Atlanta, or I don't know, somewhere in the Southeast, but Page hurt his back. So I think they only did like 10 shows and then they canceled the rest of the tour. So that was going to be my chance to see Page, and then they canceled it. You can find the Live at the Greek. I think it's like a 2-CD set. They play like some covers, some Zeppelin tunes, and some Black Crowes songs. And, you know, Black Crowes had 2 guitarists, and then they added Page in the mix there too. So there's like 3 guitars going on. So they could play like really complex arrangements of like 10 Years Gone or something like that, where like normally if you just have one guitar, you don't have all those layers. And people that know the song, like if you listen to it, you're like, oh wow, there's a lot of stuff going on there. So you remember that tour?
For sure. And I think coincidentally, they just released a new remastered version. I think either just came out or it's coming out, like a 3-disc set. So that should be pretty cool.
Gotcha. That's classic too. Remastering it and then like make us all buy it again. But I guess we're all streaming now. I don't even have a CD player.